And as now it's time to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam, and happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Lena, and happy April Fool's. I've got no tricks up my sleeve, so don't worry.
It's a funny thing because we're the first show to kick things off at Arirang Radio, and I feel like if we're ruining things for people who like practical jokes, right? Reminding everyone, beware, it's April 1st.
Right. I'm not a fan of practical jokes.
Me either.
Surprises at that.
You know, this might be a story for another day, but even the proposal that I got for my marriage, I wasn't a big fan. I don't like surprises at all. Not a fan.
I would have thought that maybe that was a bit more of a pleasant surprise, but if you fall off guard, I think I'm a bit more apprehensive to it.
Because it turns out I'm not like a good actress. I anyway,
surprise, but you know already kind of thing.
That kind of thing. But anyway, we'll leave it to rest. Happy April Fool's Day. Let's get started. We have a lot of headlines to cover this morning, starting with the latest on the medical crisis in the country. This is our first keyword of the day.
Med crisis.
So President Yoon plans to address the nation today regarding medical reforms, including the expansion of medical school admissions. It is timely because we have rising concerns over an expanded medical vacuum. We await President Yoon's address with a lot at stake. What can we expect?
Yeah, so of course, this whole issue and situation is deepening and just getting worse and looking to be prolonged at that. So President Yoon aims to clarify basically the government's position on this contentious issue. Eyes are on whether he'll be a bit more flexible on the matter as well. And the speech will be broadcast live, and it actually marks the first time since November, following the unsuccessful bid to host a World Expo in Busan, that President Yoon will deliver a national address in this format. The decision for the president to personally intervene suggests an urgency to address the ongoing concerns and anxieties among the public related to potential gaps in medical care. Previously, Yoon had instructed Prime Minister Han Duck-soo to consider flexible approaches to the suspension of medical licenses for striking trainee doctors, and emphasize the importance of communication multiple times as well. So there are some sort of cautious expectations that maybe President Yoon might be a little bit more flexible and a little bit more willing to compromise. But of course, we won't know anything until the actual speech takes place. The upcoming general elections and the emerging voices within the People Power Party as well, advocating for flexibility in the med school quota, add kind of another layer of complexity to the situation. Mm-hmm. Now, whether Yoon will introduce changes to the previously firm stance on expanding by 2,000 students, reiterate the current policy, or offer a new direction to persuade the medical community remains uncertain. Now, meanwhile, more problems ahead. Medical professors will adjust their working hours and reduce outpatient care and surgeries. The Korea Medical Association also announced that private doctors, so basically doctors at these local clinics, will adhere to a 40-hour work week as well. That heightens concerns over the growing medical service gap. The adjustment is expected to further reduce outpatient care or for non-severe patients at university hospitals, and it could possibly make evening care at local clinics more difficult as well if they are kind of overwhelmed. Now, patient organizations have called for an urgent resolution through dialogue between the government and medical community. There have been offers from each side saying they're open to talks, but considering their hardline stance and their resilience for change, their resistance to change kind of made those talks kind of come to no fruition, but we'll have to see after the speech if anything changes. But most of the consensus and the majority kind of belief is that nothing much will change.
The fundamental gap between what both sides want, there is such a huge perhaps discrepancy there, but we'll have to wait and see. As you've mentioned, President Yoon is expected to address the nation within the morning hours, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow, right? Let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
NATO meeting.
So NATO will hold a meeting of foreign ministers this week to start preparing for the summit scheduled for July in Washington. Maybe it's important to note this will mark NATO's first ministerial meeting after Sweden joined recently. What can we expect?
Yeah, so Sweden did join NATO as the 32nd member, and it will be attending for the first time. And it also coincides with the 75th anniversary of NATO's founding on April 4th. Now, it aims to demonstrate the strengthened alliance with the addition of Finland and Sweden amidst the Ukraine war, especially. Now, amid concerns that former US President Donald Trump's possible or potential return could heighten tensions between the US and European NATO members, the meeting is expected to emphasize the importance of collective defense and solidarity. Of course, we all know when Donald Trump was president, there were a lot of tensions between. He kind of targeted NATO a lot, and that kind of created some tense ties and relations between the two sides. Now, NATO has agreed on a defense spending guideline of at least 2% of GDP, but some believe that this is actually insufficient. The current security challenges posed by Russia may necessitate further discussions on increasing financial commitments. One such opinion was made by Poland's leader as well. So we'll have to see if such issues are raised again in this meeting. Also, for the first time, the ministers from South Korea, Japan, New Zealand and Australia have been invited to participate. This highlights NATO's increased focus on the Indo-Pacific region and concerns over China's growing military presence as well. Not just military, but economic presence also. Foreign Minister Park Jin, we of course attending the session, and he'll likely focus on discussions about North Korea and Russia's military cooperation as well. Now, this topic has gained urgency following the failure to extend the mandate of this UN panel monitoring monitoring sanctions against the North due to Russia's veto. This is something that we mentioned in the segment before. Speculations about a potential trilateral summit between South Korea, the US and Japan in conjunction with July's NATO summit have also emerged, according to Japanese news reports. So we could see another strengthening of those trilateral ties, especially in the face of a more hardline stance of North Korea.
The South Korean foreign minister, Cho Tae-ho, right? I saw
Cho Tae-ho, sorry.
in a different part of the election.
Yeah.
Not ancient, rather recent, but I understand why there was a typo there. But anyway.
Excuse me, sorry. I don't know what came over me. That. Thank you for that.
It just kind of rolls off your tongue, right? It had been
locked
in for
a few years. I think I was stuck in the past for a moment.
All right, so that's the upcoming ministerial meeting, the foreign ministerial meeting for the NATO summit, all in preparation for what's coming up in the month of July in Washington, D.C. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Wind farm.
So Korea is gearing up for big moves in offshore wind power, with the market expected to reach up to 100 trillion won by the year 2030. That's the plan anyway. Can you tell us the details?
Right, so the government is focusing on offshore wind as a key area, planning to diversify the energy mix that has been kind of heavily reliant on solar power up until now. Now, the country plans to install 14.3 gigawatts of offshore wind power by the year 2030. Currently, Korea's commercial offshore wind power is limited to three sites with a combined capacity of just 124.5 megawatts, making the goal of 14 gigawatts quite ambitious given the short time frame, 7 years. Now, building a 1 gigawatt offshore wind farm equivalent to the power of a nuclear reactor requires placing 200 wind turbines in the sea. The construction cost per gigawatt has risen to about 7 trillion won as well, from about 5 trillion due to recent increases in material prices and interest rates. So basically everything's just getting more expensive. This means that reaching the 14.3 gigawatt target would require around 100 trillion won of investment. So very ambitious and expensive. But the industry is on the move at an accelerating pace, though. There's 83 projects that have already been approved. That totals 27 gigawatts of potential capacity. Among these is a project by the Danish company Ørsted in the Yellow Sea, planning an 8 trillion won investment to build a 1.6 gigawatt wind farm, potentially powering 1 million households in the Seoul area by the year 2030. The government's plan includes increasing the renewable energy share from less than 10% now to 21.6% by 2030 and over 30% by the year 2036. And it also aims to achieve a more balanced solar to wind ratio as well, with wind power expected to provide a significant portion of the new renewable capacity by the year 2030. But experts note the challenges of scaling up solar power due to its unsustainability for large-scale projects and environmental and food security concerns. That's why it's looking for the sea and this wind power turbines offshore. The advantages of that is, of course, that these offshore wind turbines can produce electricity around the clock, offering a way to alleviate the kind of intermittent nature of renewable sources that are conjured up on land.
All right, with that, move on to the general elections, our fourth keyword of the day.
Campaigning.
The former Foreign Minister Park Jin is busy campaigning.
Yes, that is the right. Yeah, I think I kind of intertwined the two stories and I got a bit confused.
That is
fine. Once again, I apologize.
All right, so on to our fourth keyword this morning. So rival parties were in fierce campaigning mode over the weekend, focusing on winning over the crucial Seoul metropolitan area. I mean, just campaigning on full swing. It was the first big weekend. What's the latest?
Yeah, so if you're living in the Seoul metropolitan area, you could have probably heard the loudspeakers and the trucks with the large LED screens
Check.
Driving by. Yes, I certainly heard it from my end as well. But yeah, you'll be hearing a lot more of that. 10 days to go now until the election. So I think 9 days now until the campaigning ends. Now, in Incheon, Gaeyang, where a closely watched race is unfolding, both the PPP's Won Il-yong and the DP's Lee Jae-myung attended church services. He also visited a cathedral as well and held a rally in an apartment complex area. Won, accompanied by the former national team footballer Lee Chun-soo, who's actually become quite a bit of a YouTube sensation recently as well, appeared for support in various neighborhoods. In Seongnam's Bundang district, also a key battleground, Kim Min-hae from the PPP and Kim Byung-wook from the DP were busy rallying support. They participated in church services, debates, and held rallies at busy subway exits as well. Other candidates such as An Cheol-soo and Lee Kwang-jae also joined debate sessions and met with citizens during their morning activities. In Suwon, debates erupted over past comments made by the DP candidate Kim Jun-hyuk, which were seen as derogatory towards the former president Park Chung and so-called comfort women as well. Now, the PPP's candidates took this as a target against Kim, saying that he should resign. Kim's camp countered that Park was a person who satisfied his sexual desires with power, adding that Kim's remarks were based on well-known testimonies and records. So again, mudslinging on that end and elsewhere as well. Also in areas like Fasong and Hongsong, candidates from various parties were out meeting the public, sharing their policies and looking to garner support. Minor parties were also busy as well. The former Prime Minister Lee Nak-yeon's New Future Party focused on Seoul's Makbul district and the metropolitan area. The former PPP chief Lee Jun-seok's New Reform Party held rallies in Incheon and the Chungcheong region. Former Justice Minister Cho Guk, head of the Rebuilding Korea Party, visited Kaejae, the hometown of the late President Kim Yong-sam, and other nearby cities to woo voters in Gyeongsang province. Some candidates used creative campaign methods as well, like QR codes and educational YouTube videos to attract voter attention. Candidates also visited sports stadiums over the weekend to campaign as well, showing the wide range of strategies they're using to connect with voters during this busy election session. And in kind of an unrelated but related note, a 40-year-old YouTuber who secretly installed hidden cameras at polling stations across the country for the election has been arrested by police. So we're seeing some activity, illegal activity already ahead of the election. And he told police that he wanted to check the number of early voters because he was suspicious the number of early votes differed greatly from the main votes. So
he was suspicious of potential foul play, and he's sort of put himself out there to put up illegal cameras. Okay.
Yeah, it's a large in scale going across the country to install these hidden cameras. But yeah, so a bit of concerns. It remains to be seen this if it's the only isolated case of such dodgy actions. But yeah, they have it. The first arrest anyway, or detainment, I should say.
All right. The general elections, it's just 10 days away. And Adam is here to cover all the details.
Yes. So, yeah.
Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
That's the right solution.
So a recent survey shows that 1,000 office workers believe an automatic parental leave system and ensuring income during this leave are critical policies to counteract a declining birth rate. Can you tell us the details? Like, what exactly is an automatic parental leave anyway?
Right. So, of course, that's a question that's kind of that you might be wondering. Now, according to the survey conducted by what's translated as Captain 119, basically translates to kind of workplace bullying 119. 27.5% of respondents favored these measures. Now, the automatic parental leave system refers to a system where parental leave automatically starts after maternity slash paternity leave without the need for an application. Now, other policies included stricter penalties for employers who discriminate against employees for childbirth or parenting responsibilities, and efforts to prevent the exploitation of non-regular workers while ensuring the creation of quality jobs. Now, Capgil 119's also reviewed the election pledges of each political party as well. They found that most parties included policies related to addressing low birth rates, such as the automatic parental leave system. However, the Democratic Party, Justice Party, and New Future Party presented pledges related to reducing working hours, according to the surveyor. This includes implementing a 4-day or 4.5-day work week and setting a 35-hour legal work week. However, the PPP apparently did not offer any concrete proposals for reducing work hours, aside from a pledge to discuss applying holidays to businesses with fewer than 5 employees. Now, the New Reform Party did not include any policies related to addressing the low birth rate or shortening work hours among their top 10 pledges. Now, I think this whole survey in itself should be taken with a grain of salt, because it seems to be a little bit weighted towards the opposition parties here. So it did criticize the current government and ruling party for not adequately addressing the workers' pleas for shorter working hours. And they stressed that the 22nd National Assembly should prioritize and implement the reduction of working hours. So this story in itself is a little bit geared towards favoring maybe the opposition parties and a bit more critical of the government and ruling parties. So, do take it with a grain of salt. But the current UN administration has been announcing a lot of policies as well to try and tackle the low birth rate and trying to balance work-life balance as well as part of its campaign pledges, or shouldn't say campaign if it's the government, but as one of its policy pledges. And the ruling party, of course, will go in line and follow suit with the government to try and implement the government's plans in parliament as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's not that they're completely void of such policies. Maybe it's not the priority in terms of what they're trying to put forward, but there you have it.
Thank you so much, Adam, for today's coverage. Great fun, as always. We'll see you tomorrow.
As always. You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.